Okay, that's, is this going?
Yep.
All right. So my grandmother, here's her story. And you have to imagine this is over 80, maybe 80 years ago in the Caribbean, in Puerto Rico. No running water inside the home, you know, very little to go by, but lots of people to feed. She was one of 13 siblings. And she tells the story of how one day a group of traveling preachers showed up to their home and asked her mother if she would be willing to host them as they share a message. And her mother had no objection to this. There was no reason why. And people back then used to be more open to receive people in their homes, just in general. I mean, we can be honest about that, right? It turns out these people were preaching the gospel. And out of all of the 13 siblings, the only one to believe that day was my grandmother. And it remained that way for the rest of her life. The only Christian in that household was called by God to believe that day when that group of traveling preachers came to preach. And it wasn't only until after she got married, she remembered that she had believed and she knew about the message, and she started looking for a church once she got married to see if she could be instructed in the faith. And so she was. And the reason our family can consider itself a Christian family is because one day the Lord called my grandmother to faith, and she accepted the call. And that makes her basically the matriarch of our family. I am a believer because the Lord called my grandmother and she was open to the gospel. This same woman had a major component, a major influence on me growing up, because my mother was a working woman. She was professional. She would drop me off at my grandmother's home, and she basically took care of me when I was a child. One of my fondest memories with my grandmother, and I could sit here for weeks and weeks and share fond memories, but one of my fondest memories with her have me driving with her away from the home, and as we are leaving, she would recite, and this was always the case, Psalm 23. Psalm 23. Every time we would leave the home, Jehová es mi pastor, nada me faltará. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. And this is one thing that my grandmother taught me at a very young age, to memorize scripture, but particularly the Psalms, because she took a lot of strength and power from the Psalms. This is me as a child. You do things because you're told as a child. You don't necessarily earn it. You don't necessarily own it and make it a part of your life until later. You might be in a situation where it starts making sense. Right? It's happened to all of us. So, fast forward to the year 2017. I am at that time around 38 years of age. And in all truthfulness, now I know this, but back then I did not, I started entering a sort of midlife crisis. At the time, the only thing I knew was that I was having trouble sleeping at night. For the first time in my life, I was experiencing anxiety, which I had never known, and really could not put my finger on it, not understand why exactly am I having a hard time sleeping at night. Why am I so stressed about work? Why am I so negative with my wife and children and just kind of snappy at everybody? And what is going on in my life? I'm just experiencing this trouble, which I cannot define. Now, I need to qualify that. When I say that I never had problems with anxiety, I grew up in a home where my father was an alcoholic, highly functional, smart, business-owning alcoholic, an alcoholic nonetheless, who was extremely violent. And I remember going through really, really scary situations in our home where I would experience deep fear, yet somehow it would never carry into the evening. At some point, God gave me some type of grace to be able to, you know, cry it off, and then within a short period of time, just go to bed and wake up the next day like it's any other day. I also experienced deep mental health issues on my mother's side, even to the extreme of schizophrenia, high levels of depression, multiple suicides in the household. So I think I'm pretty, if I'm honest, there was a lot of trauma going on in my life, but somehow God throughout the years kept me safe from all of that. And somehow I was always able to rest with a clear mind, a clean conscience, and just believing the Lord, you know, believing the things I was being instructed in the Bible. And I was able to go through it and learn from it and grow through it, right? Am I making any sense? But for some reason, at the age of 38, I wasn't able to do that. Something was wrong. And as the Lord would have it, Andy Wildman started preaching a series. And I remember he talked about a moment in his life when he started experiencing this. I think the event that he went through in his life at some point was that he lost a job, or it was a hard economic time for him and his family or something, but it was super stressful. He was anxious. And he gave us, the congregation, the advice that when you're going through something like this in life and you do wake up in the middle of the night, perhaps a good place to start is by reading the Psalms. So I started with Psalm 23, because again, this is the psalm that I always heard as a child. And here's what happened. I got up. You have to imagine me getting up at 12 because I can't sleep anymore, and I'm feeling this anxiety, not knowing what to do. I go outside, I look at the stars, and I start reciting Psalm 23. And I would say, in Spanish, of course, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." Except that I could not say the words, "I shall not want." Something was wrong. I cannot bring myself to say, "I shall not want." And that began my process, because I immediately knew there's something wrong. Why can I not utter these words? Long story short, the Lord taught me that at some point in my life, in the previous 10 years, since I became a father, I had stopped believing that He was my provider. I had started to believe the lie that I am the one who provides for myself, that it is ultimately up to me to provide for my family, and that I am the protector, and it is up to me to defend my family from any ill. And this idea was holding me back spiritually. Now, this happened over a period of several months. It didn't happen easily and quickly, but it was through the Psalms. And the reason I'm wanting to begin this series on the Psalms is because that's where I am. Because for the past 3 years, really, honestly, all I've been reading in Scripture is the Psalms. So I want to share with you guys some of the things that I have learned about the Psalms and how they have helped me, and how they have allowed me to, how they have opened me to allow the gospel to seep into the nooks and crannies of my life. Because I'm going to ruin it for you by giving you my end result at the beginning in the first class. The Psalms give me words when I have no words. The Psalms, in their diversity, allow me to pray to God and speak to Him even when I have nothing sensible or rational to say to Him. even when I forget what I actually need, they have the power to put me in my place, even as I'm not necessarily being instructed in the way that I tend to want to be instructed. What do I mean by that? Well, now we have to go back to 2006. That was the year that we got to Dallas. Marty and I moved in because we decided, the Lord led us, but through a series of decisions we made, that we were going to Dallas Theological Seminary and I was going to work on my degree. And I didn't necessarily have a plan at that time. I wasn't seeking to be a pastor or a preacher or a teacher, anything in particular. There was no particular ministry in my mind. All I knew was that I wanted to spend some time in my life studying the scriptures. I wanted to spend some time kind of clarifying my categories so that whatever I end up doing with my life, at least I have a foundation. Why was this important? Because unfortunately, I grew up in a church where the Bible really was not respected as God's word. And I saw Christians, myself included, pay the price for it in their walk with the Lord. So I said, there's an opportunity for me to get an education and study the scriptures. I'm going to take it. And the Lord opened that door. Now, one thing I did not know at the beginning was that my tendency at seminary was going to be to fill my head with as much knowledge as possible of the scriptures and become an expert theologian, an expert Bible expositor, an expert preacher, missionary, whatever it was. Why? Well, after all, it is an academic institution, and you are getting a legitimate education, and if you're taking it seriously, you should become sort of an expert, right? Here's the thing, that didn't work for me. Because what I found out was, 2 years into my degree, I was loving it. I was loving the education. I was loving my professors and the classes and everything I was learning. But my heart was growing cold towards God. Okay? So, again, through a series of things that happened, you know, over several months, the Lord started showing me that it is indeed possible to have great knowledge of the scriptures, even to the point where you could potentially consider yourself an expert and yet have a cold heart towards God. So, in that process, I ran across this book by Eugene Peterson. This is years ago. Eugene Peterson is that guy who... you can't call it a translation. It's really a paraphrase of the Bible. It's called The Message. How many of you have heard of The Message? He wrote a very fun way to introduce people to reading the Bible, and that was his stated purpose for working on that particular publication was that he wanted to get people in the church interested in reading the Bible. And the way he did it was by creating this fun, easy-to-read book that was based on the scriptures, but it was written in very modern language. And he took tremendous liberty to use contemporary words. I would recommend greatly, anybody who's wanting to get back potentially into the habit of reading the Bible, it's a great way, great place to start. It's a very fun way to be introduced to it. So anyways, Eugene Peterson wrote this book, and he titled it Eat This Book. Eat This Book, right? And the subtitle says what he's trying to do, A Conversation in the Art of Spiritual Reading. That caught my attention because where I was at that particular time in my education, I had become a person who's just approaching the scriptures cerebrally, right? I'm just doing researching, writing papers, expositing, all of these things that they teach you at seminary, but my heart had grown cold. So I needed someone to remind me what it was to approach the scriptures in a spiritual way, with your heart, your spiritual heart condition being a center of that reading, okay? So, he came up with a very interesting parable based on his life, and I want to share that with you today, and hopefully this will become the foundation of how we're going to approach the Psalms the next few weeks. Because I decided to title this series, Praying Through the Psalms. Okay? I am hopefully going to be sharing enough information with all of you that is interesting and important to take into consideration in terms of context and language and all of the things that are very, very important as we approach the scriptures. But I mostly want us to focus on the heart and the spiritual reading of the text. And that's why we're going to be focusing on prayer, okay? So here it goes. My wife picked up our 7-year-old grandson at noon at an October Saturday at Holy Nativity Church. Hans had been attending a class in preparation for his first communion. They drove off, headed to a local museum that was featuring a special children's exhibit on gemstones. On the way, they stopped at a city park to eat their lunches. The two of them ate while sitting on a park bench. Hans, chattering all the while, he had been chattering nonstop ever since leaving the church. And then lunch completed, his was a lettuce and mayonnaise sandwich that he had made himself. Hans shifted away from his grandmother, faced out into the park, took from his book bag a New Testament that he had just been given by his pastor, opened it, held it up before his eyes, and proceeded to read. Moving his eyes back and forth across the page in a devout but uncharacteristic silence. After a long minute, he closed the New Testament and returned to his book bag. Okay, Grandma, I'm ready. I'm ready. Let's go to the museum. His grandmother was so impressed. She was also amused because Hans cannot yet read. He wants to read. His sister can read. Some of his friends can read. But Hans can't read. And he knows he can't read. Sometimes announcing to us, I can't read, as if to reinforce our awareness of what he is missing. Hans, on the park bench, his eyes moving back and forth across the pages of the Bible, reading, but not reading. Reverent and devout, but uncomprehending. Honoring in a most precious way this book, but without awareness that it has anything to do with either the lettuce and mayonnaise sandwich he had just eaten or the museum he is about to visit, oblivious to his grandmother next to him, Hans reading his Bible, a parable. A parable of the scriptures depersonalized into an object to be honored, the scriptures detached from precedence and consequence, from lunch and museum. The scriptures in a park elevated over life on the street, a book on a pedestal text, buffered by an expansive and manicured lawn from the noise and stink of diesel-fueled 18-wheelers. It is the devil's own work to take what is presently endearing and innocent in Hans and perpetuate it into a lifetime of reading marked by devout indifference. What I want to say, countering the devil, is that in order to read the scriptures adequately and accurately, it is necessary at the same time to live them. Not to live them as a prerequisite to reading them, and not to live them in consequence of reading them, but to live them as we read them. The living and reading reciprocal, body language and spoken words, the back and forthness, assimilating the reading to the living to the reading. Reading the scriptures is not an activity discrete from living the gospel, but one integral to it. It means letting another have a say in everything we are saying and doing. It is as easy as that, and as hard. So I read this, and I was tremendously convicted because I knew that's exactly where I was. I had depersonalized the text. I had allowed myself to become a student of the text in order to become an expert of the text, and meanwhile, my heart was completely disconnected from the God of the text. What I would like for us to focus on the next, I guess it's 4 Sundays total, is on this idea. If we are going to be committed to allow the gospel to seep into the nooks and crannies of our lives, we need to work on our hearts. How are we approaching the scriptures? What is our prayer life like? I would like to suggest that the Psalms are a great place to start the conversation. That if we're struggling in our prayer life, the Psalms is a great place to start. And I can speak of this because the Lord has revived my life in the last 3 years by having me read the Psalms. Hopefully, I'll be able to share some of that with you all, and it will be helpful for you. That's going to be my intention. But for now, this is what I would like for us to do as a group, actually as several groups. I would like for us to pray through Psalm 23. What do I mean by that? You feel free to do it in the most creative possible way. Allow your hearts to speak. But the idea is this. When I pray through Psalm 23, I remind myself, for example, that David, very interestingly, wrote this psalm from the perspective of an animal, a sheep. Have you ever thought about that? That is actually not too far away from something like Jack London and his famous books, you know, Call into the Wild or White Fang or Aesop's Fables. David did something very similar when he wrote Psalm 23. He was writing a psalm to the Lord, a song of praise to the Lord from the perspective of a sheep. So, we're going to pray through Psalm 23, and I'm just going to give one example of one thing you might do. Again, feel free to do it in freedom and whatever works for your group. But I would do this. I would read the first verse, right? The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. And we might say something like, Father, remind us that you are the shepherd. That we do not command our life, but that instead we are commanded to wait for your instruction. Just as an example. And so we're going to go verse by verse and do that as a group. And then we'll end it there. Does that sound like a plan? Now I promise you, we're not going to do this every Sunday. But I wanted us to open this way. Since I'm calling it praying through the Psalms, we may as well begin our series by praying through a psalm. And anyways, that's what I wanted to share. It sound good? Does that sound like a plan? This can be a group, and then this can be a group here.